then I was really sad that I realized that I didn't prepare a second turn speech.
Today's March 5th, 2015. This is a Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. We'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 5540 and Senate Bill 5541. And we'll turn it over to Mr. Siebert.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, today you have the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board in front of you. I would note that there are two budget bills for this agency because one of the budget bills provides 6-year expenditure limitation for the grant side of the agency's program because the grants take a long time to be completed and they're funded on a reimbursable basis. The legislature has traditionally provided 6-year capital construction expenditure limitation for those grants, and that's the reason why you have two bills in front of you. I would also note that in OLIS you have a copy of the LFO short summary about the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. There's some history about the constitutional dedication of lottery revenues that are used by the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and then I would just note that the co-chair budget framework made no specific budget details or issues identified for the co-chair's budget. But in addition, with the latest forecast, our office is forecasting that the revenues available on the Measure 76, the 35% that goes for operation, is about $1 million, a little under $1 million short of funding the current service level for those programs that are currently funded with Measure 76 lottery dollars. So that will be something the committee will have to be looking at as they move forward. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm done.
All right, and we'll go ahead and call up Director Lofsgaarden.
Co-Chair Rayfield, members of the committee, for the record, Maida Lofsgaarden, Executive Director with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. With me, I have Kathy Connolly, our budget analyst. And thank you for the opportunity to spend some time this morning walking through our budget and sharing a bit with you about the investments that our agency makes in the state. I also have along with me today, as you all know from our one-on-one meetings, I am new to this position in October. So I brought a few members of my executive team, our Deputy Director Renee Davis, our Acting Grant Manager Dana, our Fiscal Manager Cindy Silbernagle, and our Monitoring and Reporting Program Manager Greg Sieglitz. I may be referring to them for some questions as we proceed, but hopefully they've trained me up well enough in the last few months. So I'm going to give a bit of an overview and some background about our agency. We are a unique agency. We're fairly new as a state agency. I'm going to spend a little time talking about that history, and then I'll walk through how our budget is organized, how we work with our board on our grant program. We'll spend some time on our key performance measures and some suggestions and recommendations we have there, and then talk about our proposals moving forward and some of the accomplishments we hope to achieve in the coming biennium. So our agency comes from this concept that voluntary restoration on the ground can help to achieve the habitat and water quality and other outcomes that we as Oregonians are all proud of. We're incredibly proud of our environment, of our natural resources, and we are also very good in Oregon at working together locally to achieve the best outcomes that make the most sense on the ground. In 1998, ballot measure 66 passed. It was a constitutional measure that provided funding for our agency for grant funding. 7.5% of lottery revenues were designated for our agency. At that point in time, the way that the funding was set up is 65% of that funding went for what we called capital projects. Those would be mostly projects on the ground, dam removals, restoration projects, sage grouse habitat, other things like that. 35% went for the what we called the operating side. That included both staff costs and other grants. So we had this funky mix where we provided grants both out of the 35% and 65%. When Measure 76 passed in 2010, it made the funding for our agency permanent. With that, there was also a shift in how our funding is provided. So now 65% of our funding goes for grants. Those are restoration grants, outreach, technical assistance, all of the granting areas. And 35% of the funding goes for what we call operations, which is the funding that supports our staff, but it also supports staff in other agencies who work on what we call Measure 76 Oregon Plan outcomes. So there are staff in a few other natural resource agencies who are supporting the objectives of our program. We recognize, again, that every watershed in Oregon is unique, and so our granting program is focused on those projects that are voluntarily initiated at the local level with cooperative local partnerships. The Oregon Plan also has a strong emphasis on practical and achievable science recovery plans, and that we continue to monitor our progress in those areas and adaptively manage so that we can continue to improve the work that we're doing on the ground. In 2010, at the same time that ballot measure 76 was passing, our board established a strategic plan. The mission of our board and our funding is to help protect and restore healthy watersheds and natural habitats, but also that those investments support thriving communities and strong economies. We recognize that there's a clear link between the grants we provide on the ground and local contractors, local landowners, and we want to make sure that our grants are supporting rural communities and economies as well. Our board established at the same time five goals for their program. These goals discuss how we invest at the state level. First, we want to invest adaptively. Again, we want to use the best available science. We want to work with local communities. We want to restore and sustain resilient ecosystems. So that means as we look at climate change and other factors that we are managing and shifting our investments over time. We in Oregon are incredibly lucky, and our board focused on local infrastructure development. We are one of the few states in the country that the state provides dedicated funding for watershed councils and soil and water conservation districts. I've worked in other states, and I can tell you that the ability to have that local infrastructure on the ground invested in through the state really ramps up the quality and the complexity of the projects that folks are doing. I came from Montana, and their coordinator might be funded half-time, and they spend half of their time raising money for the other half of their position, which makes it incredibly difficult to get done the work you need to do on the ground. Our board feels that is very important, and a part of our spending plan is always dedicated towards local infrastructure. We also believe in a strong public awareness and involvement campaign. These projects that we do are primarily on private lands with farmers, ranchers, and forest landowners. We need to make sure that they understand and know the work that we're doing and are supportive of that work, and that local communities see the results of our projects. We are working towards partnership development, both at the local level, helping to grow strong local partnerships, but also partnerships with tribes, state and federal agencies, and at the state level with other funders. We have, again, some great foundations in this state. We have federal agencies who are investing in the same types of things that we are, and the more that we can work with local partners to leverage those investments, the better off we'll be at the end of the day. Finally, we on the staff and board are firmly committed to efficient and accountable administration. I'll be talking later about some of the steps that we are taking in that direction, but we have a staff who is daily committed to finding ways that we can improve efficiency of how we run our granting programs. In 2012, our board recognized that while our strategic plan sits at a high elevation, we also have a two-year spending plan that we use for our grant investments. And there wasn't a really good linkage between that strategic plan and the investments on the ground. So 2012, we spent a fair amount of time putting together what we call a long-term investment strategy framework. it's, if you will, the lens that our board looks at when they look at our funding and categorizes our funding over time. So in they have four areas that they are committed to investing in. Again, operating capacity is one of those areas. Then they have the category they call open solicitation. When ballot measures 66 and 76 were passed, they were passed across the state. Every community, county in the state supported this program. And we want to make sure that we have a strong grant program that is available in every county and every region of the state. The majority of our funding goes out through this responsive grant making, open solicitation. But the board also recognized at the same time that there's an opportunity to have landscape scale outcomes when you can invest at the landscape scale. So the board has tested since 2008 a model of focused investments, and they have formalized that through their long-term investment strategy. The focus of this is to have multi-year, multi-million dollar investments with strong partnerships in local communities to achieve landscape scale outcomes, and I'll be talking about a few of those later. Finally, in all of those areas, we need to have strong effectiveness monitoring, whether it's the investments that we make for capacity or the investments that we're making on the ground to ensure that they're made in the right place, and again, that we can change over time as we learn more about our investments. As Mr. Siebert mentioned earlier, we have basically two components. We have our grant program that has the six-year capital limitation. It supports the grants on the ground. You'll see in some of the charts that we provide later, there's a little bit of a shift in the funding for our grant program. We used to bring all of our federal funds in under operations based on some great conversations with LFO. We have shifted all of our grant, whether they are federal dollars or lottery dollars, into our grant program. So you can really look and see exactly what the grant program numbers are biennium. And then we have our operations program. I'm going to just walk through our organizational chart. We are a very small agency, so it's a fairly easy chart to walk through. We have a 17-member board, which is a pretty big board given that currently we have 32 FTE. So a large board to manage, but they are incredibly helpful because of their representation. So five of our board members are public at-large members. Appointed by the governor, confirmed by the Senate. We have one tribal representative. We have five representatives from other boards and commissions. So the Board of Agriculture, Environmental Quality, Forestry, Water Resources, Fish and Wildlife are all on our board. And that gives us the ability to make sure that our investments are connected up with the priorities of these other boards and commissions. We also have non-voting representation from OSU Extension and other federal agencies. As I mentioned before, they are either funders, so we're co-funding a lot of projects, or in the case of the National Marine Fisheries Service, they also have a regulatory role. So again, we can make sure that our investments are matching up with recovery plans and others. So we have under the deputy director position, we have what we call our focus investments and policy area. This is where we're running our focus investment program. Under the monitoring and reporting program, we have both our monitoring positions and we have extensive reporting on our programs, particularly reporting to our Federal Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund. About a third of our budget comes from those federal funds, and so we have some specific reporting requirements there. Under our grant program, this is the engine of our open solicitation grant program and also our capacity. We have regional staff in six regions of the state that are under our grant program, as well as administrative support. And then we have our fiscal services area that is responsible for budget and also making all of our payments. I've highlighted on the next slide our 15-17 governor's request budget. I've noted a couple of areas here just so you understand within our organizational chart where the positions are that we're requesting. So on the left, you see three positions with a red arrow. Those are current limited duration positions. We are requesting that those positions continue. Again, we have a fairly small agency. We operate a very efficient program. Continuing those limited duration positions helps us to run our operations efficiently and effectively. You'll see in the middle there are three new positions proposed. These are as a part of the governor's recommended budget. Two positions related to conservation outcomes. They are tied in with the Clean Water Partnership. And Richard Whitman will be here on Monday morning to speak directly about the Clean Water Partnership. One of the key components is that we target our investments towards water quality, both non-regulatory and regulatory, and that we measure the outcomes that we're achieving, again, so that we can make sure that we're meeting the water quality that Oregonians expect. And so we have two positions associated with that on the non-regulatory side to help make sure that we are monitoring wherever we possibly can on water quality. We also have a half-time FTE associated with the running the Forest Health Collaborative program that I'll talk about shortly.
And I had a quick question. Yes. When I was looking at the organization chart, if you could go back one.
Absolutely.
If you look at the very top, it says Willamette Park Coordinator.
Yeah.
That appears to be a part-time position.
No, it's partnership. It was an abbreviation for partnership.
Okay.
It is a full-time position.
At the bottom, though, the key says limited duration.
It is partially funded with federal funds, and in the past, we have always had those normally had those as limited duration positions because we don't know if the federal funds will continue to come. So this is one that was limited duration last time. We're requesting it again as a limited duration. We had asked for it as, I think, permanent in the ARB, but it's in the GRB as a limited duration position.
And then the second one down, it says administrative support. The outline barrier would indicate it's a permanent FTE, but the dots on the inside indicate it's a limited duration FTE, and I was trying to figure out which one it was.
It was a limited duration position, again, that we had requested to be a permanent position. With the shift in funding in the GRB, it was returned back to a limited duration position.
Okay, and then the package, the partnership coordinator at the bottom is a permanent FTE.
That is our request.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Dimbro.
Thanks. Maydez, could you speak a little more about the Willamette Partnership? What is that? What does that do?
Yes, Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Dimbro. That position has two distinct roles. The first is to manage our Willamette Special Investment Partnership. This is one of the focus investments I referenced earlier. We'll talk about a little bit later. This investment started in 2008, and it's a combined funding initiative between us and the Meyer Memorial Trust and the Bonneville Power Administration. The position, in part, manages that program. It still has a competitive grant component, but it also requires a level of management coordination amongst the partners along the Willamette Main Stem and what we call the model watersheds, which are in the upper part of the Willamette Basin. In addition, this position is partially funded through Bonneville Power because it manages their Habitat Technical Team funds. So there's another granting program that this position is also coordinating on behalf of Bonneville Power. So our target groups, our investments are made through a number of places, primarily through watershed councils, soil and water conservation districts, and land trusts. Again, we have a strong base of those organizations in the state. We also grant funds to cities and counties, to tribes, to other non-government river keepers and other groups. And we do have two granting programs that grant directly to landowners as well. And at the end of the day, of course, the vast majority of our funding is with private landowners. It just goes through these other organizations as a grant program.
Senator Hansel.
Thank you. Where would, or is it on this slide at all, the noxious weed program fall?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, the Noxious Weed Program is a part of our grant program. I'll be talking about it a little bit later. We coordinate that directly with the Department of Agriculture, and the funding goes through many of these same groups, the councils, districts, cities, counties, and other NGOs. It's a $2.5 million program. We build it into our spending plan each biennium.
Yeah, I think it comes from the lottery funds.
It does.
And it's a pass-through, but I was just wondering why it wasn't a separate thing, because it goes to all of those eventually, but it comes through the Department of Agriculture first.
Thank you. Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, I have a slide later. There are a number of programs that operate that way, and that's one of the ones I'll highlight that are all that we are managing programs on behalf of other agencies. So we deliver our programs. Our agency solicits. We complete reviews. We partner strongly with other agencies in reviewing the applications. We manage the program. We complete effectiveness monitoring. And we work to develop partnerships at the local and state level. Our partners are the ones who are getting the work done on the ground. And it's an incredibly effective and efficient process, because we don't then have to have those individuals on staff. Through the work of councils, districts, land trusts, and others, it's an incredible workforce that is run through our granting programs. Landowners and communities then commit to that work on their land and invest in the local restoration economy. For every $1 million that we invest, and I'll mention this a few times today, 15 to 24 local jobs are created, according to the University of Oregon, and 90 cents of every dollar that we invest stays in local communities. So I've talked about Measure 76, our statutes. We have federal funding I'll be talking about shortly, and we walk through our mission and strategic plan. What I want to highlight here is the fact that our investments through our spending plan and activities that we fund support the plans and programs of many other agencies. So whether it's Department of Agriculture's Water Quality Management Program, the Integrated Water Resources Strategy, the Conservation Strategy, the list goes on. Our investments are supporting the delivery of those plans on the ground. Because of that, then staff from those different program areas sit on our review teams to make sure that the projects that come in really do support implementation as they envision. Our board oversees our investments through a spending plan that we approve each biennium. I'm going to talk a little bit about the percentages in the spending plan. I have copies available of the plan if anybody is interested in seeing it. One of the caveats I'll make is that the spending plan numbers don't necessarily match the biennial budget, and that is because we have funds that carry over from biennia to biennia. We have, as was mentioned earlier, we have projects that are taking 6 years. We have projects that end with extra money that we can then roll back into other grants. So while your numbers are what we use in our spending plan, there's also a little bit of shift each biennium based on some of those other factors. I am going to talk about how our spending plan is broken up, however. So I'm using the 2011-13 spending plan and expenditures rather than 13-15, because we still have one grant cycle left to go. So I want to just give you a snapshot of how the board looks at our spending plan and how it looks at expenditures. So here our open solicitations, as I mentioned before, are about 64-65% of the investments we make on the ground. We do grant cycles twice a year, so four grant cycles every biennium. Our focus investments currently are about 12% of our full portfolio. Our board has indicated that they want to increase that over time, so we're working on a strategy and a set of priorities right now with our board to increase our focus investments over time. Operating capacity continues to be a strong component of our program, and then we have a small section of other grants that don't fit neatly into those categories but are strong investments for the board, both tied to priorities in the Oregon plan and some programs that we partner with federal agencies to invest in. So this is what it looks like. The reason I brought this slide up is, while we talk about the fact that we have open solicitations and focus investments, that doesn't really say what we do. So the types of grants we do are these. Technical assistance, that helps to design projects, engineering. It also does some limited landowner outreach as you get close to implementing a project. This helps, again, it's something that we strongly support in Oregon, that we really get projects that are designed well, that their budgets are appropriate for the project by spending some time really on the planning up front. We do have grants for both land and water acquisitions. These, we do not own any property. These are grants that are provided to land trusts and others, either to support conservation easements or for entities to purchase properties for conservation values. We have monitoring grants, and we do monitoring within our staff. We have outreach grants. Again, this is focused on landowner outreach or volunteers working on projects on the ground. And then the biggest chunk is our restoration grants. And this is what they look like on, oh, I jumped one too far. Oh, there we go. So currently we have 1,200 open grant agreements, a balance of about $62 million. In this biennium so far, we have reviewed 1,337 applications and implemented grant agreements. So that's a combined number in this biennium. The applications received has totaled about 506. There are 56.4 million in requests to date. We still have one grant cycle left to go. And this is what it looks like on the ground. So since 1999, we have invested in projects across the state. I'll be talking later about some of those projects specifically, but you can see that the impacts run basically in every county of the state. We have numbers for each county of our investments that we've made and the types of investments since 1999. I'm going to switch now and talk about our key performance measures. I want to spend a little bit of time here because one of the recommendations that we have is we would like to come back to next biennium with a proposal for shifting some of these key performance measures. We would like to work with our board and with our partners on that, and I'd like to explain to you some of the measures and why we might be coming back to you with shifts. Again, we don't have a proposal in hand right now. We're just requesting that we be able to spend some time and bring a proposal back to you. So our operations key performance measure is the percent of funding, total funding that we use in our agency operations. The outside funding is how much money comes in that is used to match with our OWEB dollars. Restoration is the percent of investments that are tied to priorities, whether basin or watershed priorities. Our payments is the percent of complete grant payments paid within 24 days. The statutory requirement is 45 on that. Fish populations is the percent of native fish species that we monitor that exhibit increasing or stable levels of abundance. Plant communities is the percent of riparian stream miles compared to the total number of stream miles that we've improved. Work plans are the watershed councils implementing the work plans each biennium. Fish monitoring is the percent of native fish that were monitored to a level considered adequate. Salmon habitat quantity ties to the percent of potential habitat that we improve each year. And we have the traditional customer service figures that talk about our timeliness, accuracy, helpfulness, expertise, and information availability. So this is the chart that you typically see that shows where we are on the KPMs. I want to talk through a little bit about each and some of the opportunities and challenges that we have. So the percent of our total funding used in agency operations, we've had a goal of 6% for our agency. That was set back under Measure 66. And if you remember back to the beginning of the presentation, 35% of the funds were available for operations. That included money that came to us and to other agencies. Under Measure 66, all of that money came to us. And then we did agreements out with the other agencies. And so under Measure 76, that money just goes directly to other agencies. So we had this huge drop in the amount of money that we managed, and we didn't change the KPM to reflect that. When we compare ourselves to other foundations of the same size that we are, 15 to 50 employees, 15% is the average staff to grant ratio for private foundations. We're not sure what it should be, but we want to take a look and see what the appropriate number may be. For the percentage of funding from outside sources, we are currently at a higher than 1-to-1 ratio. The goal is that we would be at a 1.5-to-1 ratio. This is something that we continue to strive towards. Bringing other funders into projects is really important for us. We do feel we're doing good in this area. Our counterpart in Washington achieves a 66% match requirement, and we're over 100%. So I think we're doing good compared to other states, but an area that we continue to work on. For the percentage of restoration investments that address established priorities, this is still pending. We've been working to figure out how do we best have our local folks indicate to us, other than just saying, oh, yeah, we're meeting local priorities, how do we have a better system to measure that? As I mentioned earlier, our board is working on setting a set of statewide priorities. So all of our focus investments will have to meet priorities in the future. So we'll be able to point to that. And we're moving to an online grant system that will require the applicant select linkages between what they're doing and the associated plan. So I think we'll be able to report on that in the future. The percent of our grant payments within 24 days, we are hitting this, and our hope is to improve even more in that area. Our staff is working hard to increase our efficiency there. We have one of my favorite stories, the fish population, where we're seeing populations either stable or improving. Just this year, the Oregon chub were the first species to be delisted under the Endangered Species Act. That's 42 years of ESA, and this is the first species to be delisted. A lot of the habitat on which the Oregon chub survives and thrives are habitat where we've had projects along with state and federal partners. So we continue to monitor this. One of the challenges is we can only look at the trends of fish that are monitored, but we think that there are a lot of the projects that we are doing that are directly attributing to improvements in fish abundance. The percent of riparian miles, this is our number 6, and the percent of habitat made available. This is not just a number about what OWEB did. The way this KPM is set up, it's a number about what happened entirely in the state. So how many acres or riparian stream miles did we improve? How much fish habitat did we make available? Is us and federal agencies and voluntary local efforts all combined. The challenge we have is it's been difficult as of late to get voluntary reporting. And the federal agencies have shifted. There's a database that they used to report to that starting in 2012, they really haven't been reporting to anymore. Our latest numbers are 0 with that database. And so we're working to figure out better ways that we can either get the number or come back to you with something that would more accurately reflect what we're trying to get at here with habitat and riparian acres.
So I had a quick question. So it says 0 in the past. How much of the investment from OWEB or the grant funding has actually produced some actual riparian stream miles of improvement on stream miles?
Could you repeat the question?
Yeah, it was a poorly worded question. So in the past, when I'm looking at the actual bar graph here in the for KPM's number 6, and so in the past, you know, obviously, you know, you've been getting additional reporting that has showed that, you know, you've hit the 1 mile target, you know, in the past. I was curious how much of that information in the past, how many miles of investment from OWEB, you know, or came from OWEB, that, I mean, in the past. Not a very great word.
Co-Chair Rayfield, I think I understand your question. I don't have the specific breakdown right now of which portion of that came from OWEB and which portion came from other sources. We pull from our, on our end, from our water restoration inventory, which pulls combined. But we can absolutely get that number for you.
And is it the intent of this KPM that the OEB's investment into the community would actually increase the amount of portions of miles improved?
Co-Chair Rayfield, yes, the intent is that. And I think the challenge that we have, we're reporting under the Oregon plan for some of these KPMs, not just our agency. And so the assumption is that we contribute greatly to these goals, but that there are many other partners doing the same thing. And the challenge we've had is just in how can we consistently get that reporting from our other partners.
But the reporting, okay, from other partners.
Yeah.
So, okay, that makes sense.
So for our work plan KPM, our watershed councils are meeting to the 90% level, the completion of work plans. We're hoping to get that up to 100% over time. For salmon, we talked about that already. The final one for our customer service, we have had a little bit of a dip in our customer service over the last couple of years, and I think that's for a couple of reasons. We've been making a lot of changes through our long-term investment strategy. When you switch how your grant investments are made, that raises some angst with the grantees on the ground, and we've been doing these changes through public processes. We've been holding listening sessions across the state. But that is a shift in how the funder is funding. And so we're working on that. We're working to make sure that we have open communications with our grantees. And I'll talk about later, our staff are doing some amazing work to improve our efficiency. And I think that will return our numbers to the high levels that we hope to see.
Yeah, and just a couple more questions. On the Key Performance 9, which is the salmon habitat quantity, I know you chatted a little bit about that. Some of the decline in, you know, I'm seeing in the actual bar graph, it goes down to zero for 2014. In 2013, it dips below the line. Is that, again, because of trying to get that reporting from other?
That is the same database. I was just looking for the name of the database. I had written it down. But it's the same federal database, and that's the challenge that we're having is that the reporting isn't coming in the way that it should be. I think we can find other methods, but in the review that we're proposing to undertake of our KPMs, there may be even better ways for us to look at this than the two indicators that we have now. Many of our KPMs are over 5 years old, and we've had a whole new ballot measure and permanent funding and a lot of new funding partners in that time, and it just feels like we're trying to measure some stuff that may not be the best.
It's tough to measure the effectiveness of some of these grants without the information, right?
Yeah.
The other last question, then we'll go over to Senator Hansel. On the KPM 1, as I was just looking through it, and I may have been trying to find the graphs while you were speaking about this, but I was just noticing that it's kind of the percentage of funding used in operations is increased, and it's actually above the line. And I had read a little bit about that in the, you know, why that happened, but I just wanted to kind of a little further explanation for
yeah.
most of the folks.
So, Representative Rayfield, there are a couple of reasons for this. First, under Measure 66, the funding that went to other agencies through our lottery funds came first through OWEB. And so that counted as a part of our grant budget, of our overall budget. That was a fairly sizable number. And so you'll see that there was a pretty big shift that happened when those funds under Measure 76 now go directly to the other agencies. So I think there's just a functional shift that we need to address there. But in addition, since that point in time, we do have a couple of programs that have taken increased staff. And as an example, our monitoring programs doesn't increase the number of grants when we're running more effective monitoring, right? It's the same number of grants. We're just doing a much better job of monitoring. That increases our ratio. However, when we compare ourselves to private foundations, which is really our closest comparison, typically foundations with 15 to 50 employees have about a 15% staff-to-grant ratio. So we feel like we're in the right range, but we've gone well above what this KPM was, and I think we need to analyze what should that number really be.
Yeah, and so that was my next question. Should this number stay at 6%, or are you looking to increase that number to, say, 10%? Or, I mean, what's your goal going to be for the next biennium?
Co-Chair Rayfield, that's a great question, and one of the things we'd like to do is a more complete analysis. So we've done an analysis compared with private foundations. We'd also like to complete an analysis with, there aren't many organizations like us in other states, agencies like us, but there are some. So we'd like to also complete an analysis compared with other states and bring you back a number that we think would more accurately reflect the marketplace for our type of program. I don't have that number yet, but we'd like to bring one back to you.
Okay, thank you. So Senator Hansel.
Yes, if we go back to the previous slide, Maida, I'm not sure what you're communicating there. What is, I need some help.
Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, thank you for that question. This is the standard chart that is produced out of the key performance measures. So this is just showing you, I walked through the individual ones, but these are of our 10 KPMs, we have 40% that we are meeting. We have 10% that were below by either 6 to 15%. And we have 40% that we are not below the target by more than 15%.
Okay. And then just.
This actually is all the KPMs.
Oh, good. Just a suggestion for me. I know you've gone through the individuals. I think they're somewhere in the presentation. It would have been more helpful for me to have a slide on each one, maybe.
Oh, perfect.
I
Thank
can
you.
Follow that a little bit better. Because when you lump them all together, it's hard for me to.
Yeah, and just as clarification, Senator, I brought the GRB binder, and I looked in the appendix to pull those up, and so I got you that on the and it will have the little slides that I was referencing there.
Yeah, just for what it's worth.
Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, we would be glad to do that. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I might note that I noticed that the report is not in the appendix material submitted by the agency, so we'll make sure we get that posted up for tomorrow's or for Monday's meeting.
Thank you very much for bearing with us as we went through
No that. Problem. Thank you. So as I mentioned, we would like to undertake a review, bring you back the ones that seem most accurate and can get you the best information possible. So our budget drivers and environmental factors, I'm just going to walk through some of our as was mentioned at the beginning of the presentation, lottery fund revenues are flat to potentially down. I keep hoping optimistically for flat, but I keep hearing probably not. We also have a third of our funding comes from federal funds. We have a competitive grant process for those funds. And so while we perform incredibly well in the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund grant program, it is a grant program, and we're always paying attention to what Congress does with that funding and continuing to make sure that we are competitive. We achieve the vast majority of the outcomes of that program for the country, but that doesn't mean that we can rest on our laurels, and we need to continue to make sure we compete well in those funds. There are limitations on how funds are used. So with the passage of Measure 76, the lottery funds are pretty flexible. We can use them for outreach and monitoring and technical assistance. At the same time, the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Funds have become much more explicit in the types of projects that the money can be used for. So that shifts our ability to make sure that we're investing all of our dollars appropriately. We closely watch and manage that, but it has shifted our granting over time. At the same time, we have some great budget drivers in terms of investing in new granting programs that support thriving communities. We'll be talking about the Forest Health Collaboratives program. We partner with Department of Forestry on this program. We have run a collaborative grant program for the last biennium with them and are proposing to continue that and increase the funding for that program in this biennium. And then we have Senate Bill 204, I'll be talking about shortly, that is the working force and farms that would support both easements and long-term investments related to conservation on working force and farmlands.
Yeah. And Representative Hack.
Thank you, Co-Chair. Can you give us an idea of what your percentage of successes to failures in the competitive grant process for your federal funds? So do you have an idea of what percentages that you're actually getting versus what you're applying for?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Representative Heck, we are allowed every year to apply for $25 million of funding through the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund. We know that that is never the amount that we will receive. That is the maximum amount that we could get. We are very successful. We typically get about $12 to $13 million in funds received. And so we have a general expectation of that that's where we're going to land. I think if I remember right, we're the second highest recipient. So we feel we perform very well compared to what we apply for. We're about 50% successful, but that's generally what we expect to receive in each year.
So that's typically what you get each year. That's pretty much the norm, or if you're second, that's actually pretty darn good.
Representative Rayfield, Representative Heck, yes, we do think that it's a really good number.
Great, thank you.
So again, I'll talk about our granting efficiency. We run nearly 1,200 open grants. Currently, we average between 1,000 and 1,200 grants. We'll be talking again about the administration for grant program delivery. Again, we feel we're operating in a fairly efficient realm there. We do rely on other agencies to provide technical support through our Measure 76 funds to review our grants. We think that's a strong partnership because the grants at the end of the day are implementing the programs that they want to deliver on the ground. I'll just refer again briefly to our long-term investment strategy. I'm going to be talking about some of our proposals to contain costs and improve services. So again, as we look at those things, we're looking in these four areas of capacity, open grants, focus investments, and effectiveness monitoring. So our work to contain costs and improve services, we have a cross-agency approach from the start of our agency. It's part of how we were designed. It's part of the reason that we are such a small agency. Our board structure, as I've talked about, requires that we are continually reaching out to other state and federal agencies to ensure that our grants are focused in the right places. We have funding to support voluntary local restoration, not just on the operations side, again, not just our agency, but we are supporting other agency staff. They don't just review our grant applications, but they're helping districts, councils, and others on the ground to implement projects. So we have staff from agriculture, fish and wildlife, water resources, and other agencies who are out there actively on the ground, making sure that those grants are the best that they can be. Our grant team review structure, other agency staff participate on our review teams. Our grant review team is fairly reflective of our board. So the same types of agencies sit on our grant review team as sit on our board. We coordinate well with other agencies. We engage them in planning. We engage with them in implementation. I'll be talking shortly about the Clean Water Partnership, but as I mentioned previously, we have a strong role both in implementation on the non-regulatory side through our granting program and in monitoring those investments to ensure that we're achieving the results that we hope to. We also, from our internal perspective, because we are such a small agency, we have reached out over the years and we share internal services with other agencies as well. That includes payroll, accounting, human resources, IT, and internet services. And as Senator Hansel preempted earlier, we deliver a lot of grant programs on behalf of other agencies. So for the Department of Agriculture, we deliver both the Soil and Water Conservation District capacity grants in partnership with them. And the weed grant program. In both of those places, you'll see the implementation staff is housed at Department of Agriculture. We run the grant side of it. We're very efficient and effective at that. And through Measure 76, it is required that one agency actually be the grant delivery program. And so we do that. We do that in close partnership. It's a great relationship we have between our agency and the rest of the agencies listed here. With the Oregon Department of Forestry, we are coordinating the Forest Health Collaborative grants. With the new proposal under Senate Bill 204, the Working Forests and Farms Program, we would manage the grant program in combination with a multi-agency team, including agriculture and forestry. We manage payments through the U.S. Department of Agriculture for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. It's a riparian program that provides both riparian improvements and long-term contract payments. We manage coastal wetland grants for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We apply for those grants, and then we turn around and deliver those two projects on the ground. We provide both match and grants and reporting to complement the Department of Land Conservation and Development's Oregon Coastal Management Program. And again, a third of our funding is the Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Funding, and we turn that around to grants on the ground as well.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Hansel.
I just want to say I was a chair of the State Noxious Weed Board when the funding changed and the measure had been passed. And your department really did a great job working with the Department of Agriculture and making it come together, because it was new for everybody. And the Ag Department had been doing this for a while, but now we had another funding source with other regulations. And I just really appreciated how well you listened and worked together, and we made the program work.
Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, thank you very much. It was a new process for us as well, and I give a lot of credit to the staff who just sat down and really spent some time to make it work. Yeah. We are working to make improvements and contain costs in other areas as well. Our staff is committed to, and I'm very excited about what we call our continuous improvement program. That is, some of you may know Lean Kaizen. That is one component of this program. We're using that approach to assess our processes, to identify any waste, and to redesign our steps to increase our efficiency and really focus on the customer. And I do believe that that's going to result in increased customer service over time. I've been so impressed with our staff as we've undertaken this process at their ability to say, you know, I think we can fix this. I think we can have fewer steps and still have the same accountability that we need as a granting agency. It's really about the people, and with such a small agency, there are many improvements we can make fairly quickly. In addition, we are very technology focused. We are testing some new approaches, both for our grant applications, for better tying in GIS-based information into those proposals, all of which results in easy access to our grant investments on the backside. Where did we invest? How did we invest? And what improvements have we seen on the ground? I'll be showing you some examples of that at the end of this presentation. In addition, so as I mentioned before, we co-manage the conservation district capacity grants with the Department of Agriculture. We are the sole manager for the Watershed Council capacity grants. And over the last few years, we've undertaken a process to really improve the quality of those grants, to provide some guidelines for the local organizations to understand what effective local organizations need to have in place. It was a four-year process, and we've just completed it. We're running our first grant cycle under our new council capacity grant process, and we're really excited about the changes that we've seen from our local organizations, including some organizations who are looking to collaborate strategically locally. We have a group down in the Rogue that is combining a set of watershed councils into one. We have conservation districts who are hosting watershed councils and covering their administrative costs. So there are a lot of areas, I think, over time where we're going to see great increases in efficiency at the local level as well. When we were talking earlier about the Willamette Special Investment Partnership, we have a number of other special investment partnerships as well in the Deschutes and in the Klamath, and another initiative called the Whole Watershed Restoration Initiative. These have started as early, WWRI started in 2007. And these programs have tested new ways for us to invest either at the funder level more collaboratively or at the implementer level in programs that are achieving very specific ecological outcomes. So you see this set. I won't go through the full list of other funders, but in each of these areas, we have multiple other funders coming to the table. We have specific outcomes that are designed and developed in collaboration with local partners. We have very strong local partnerships who are implementing projects on the ground. And what we are seeing is an ability to more quickly achieve outcomes than we could if we were just funding single project by single project. We have specifically found that in order to do this, you have to have very high performing partnerships on the ground locally who are ready to implement at a landscape scale. They need to have strategic action plans in place so they know exactly where they're going and what they want to achieve, and they need to be really focused on their ecological outcomes. So under our new focused investment program, we are going to be providing granting to help organizations get to this level of solid action plans, ecological outcomes, and high-functioning partnerships, and then have granting available to deliver for projects on the ground at the end of the day. I'd like to shift now and talk a little bit about our investments specifically in this next budget. As you know, in the Working for Farms and Forests initiative, there is $45.6 million in that initiative, including funding for sage-grouse, including the Conservation Finance Initiative and others. Within that package, OWEB has a little bit over $2.3 million for Federal Forest Collaborative grants and the staff to help manage that program. That's an increase from last biennium. It's been an incredibly successful program on the ground. And $15 million for conservation easements and long-term agreements under Senate Bill 204 Working Forests and Farms program. Under the Clean Water Partnership, this is a coordinated multi-agency effort. Again, the goal is to take a look in watersheds and basins across the state to get the data to really clearly identify what the needs are and where those needs exist, to analyze that, get the information out to the folks on the ground who are doing the projects, to implement those projects with grant and other funding, evaluate, and then provide feedback so that we can make sure that we're making the best investments possible. We assume that our granting program will be very directly involved in the implementing the projects on the ground. We are one of the lead funders in the state for water quality improvements along with U.S. Department of Agriculture. And in addition, we are requesting two outcome-based monitoring positions to support, again, that evaluation to make sure our investments are going in the right place at the right time. There are a set of other packages I just want to highlight. We have numerous packages that are required as a part of the budget process, but again, we have the program continuity and enhancement positions that I highlighted earlier in our organizational chart. Package 200 is our grant funds. We ask for those each biennium. Package 220 is the forest health grant funds that I just mentioned. And then package 502 is the Working Forests and Farms grant funds. Package 502 is the biggest increase our agency has seen in quite a while, but we think that there are some pretty incredible opportunities around conservation and working lands in Oregon. I'd like to mention, and of course, this is always fun when it's your first budget presentation and there are going to be some potential amendments that will be coming forward. So I'll start by saying we've been working closely with the governor's office and with LFO, and I really appreciate the advice and consultation of both Mr. Siebert and Ms. Connolly in making sure that I don't completely step off the deep end here. If I do, you can blame them. So we have a few changes that we'll be proposing. First, when I came on board in October, we also brought on board new human resources staff. They identified that some of our position descriptions are woefully outdated, and that some of our older ones don't necessarily match with our newer ones. We are going through an analysis of all of the position descriptions in our agency. As you know, when that happens, it may result in some reclassifications, which may result in a budget impact. We don't think it will be great, but we may be coming back to you with a permanent finance plan to identify how we will address those impacts, if there are any. In addition, House Bill 3333 from Representative Gomberg is the salmon license plate bill that would shift all of the funding for salmon license plates directly over to grant programs. We had been proceeding down that path already based on the discussions from last fall and early spring. We were going to have our board put a policy in place that said that the funds would be used specifically for grants. That will result in an impact to our operations, a fiscal impact, and so we will be coming back to you with a budget amendment for that as well. Finally, last June, we had a federal funds grant request in through the Emergency Board for three grants through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. We were approved to apply for those grants, and we were successful in receiving all three grants. These grants, again, come through us for projects on the ground. The grants total $2.63 million for an acquisition at Schofield Creek down in southwestern Oregon, an acquisition at, called the Kilches Acquisition in Tillamook County, and then a restoration project at China Camp Creek, which is on the Coquille. All of those were successful. In conversations with LFO, we don't think that there is a need for additional federal funds limitation, but we want to continue that conversation through the spring, and we may be coming back with a request for additional federal funds limitation for 15-17. So I have two slides that show our budget changes over time. This first slide is just the lottery funds beginning back in 1999. You'll see early on there was a fairly exponential increase in lottery funds. Luckily, we had a very conservative board, and I don't think that our eyes were bigger than our stomach at any point in time. We still planned fairly conservatively. You'll see that along with all the rest of the lottery funds, revenues declined pretty sharply in the 9/11 biennium and have not come back to the level that they were in 07-09. We have really worked on the operations side to make sure that we keep our staff fairly conservative as well, given those figures. And our granting program is flexible in that it is responsive to whatever funds are available. This next slide combines those lottery funds with the federal and other funds that we receive. Other funds include some other funds from the National Marine Fisheries Service, Forest Health Collaborative grants, and salmon license plate revenues. You can see we are not projecting big increases moving forward. And the line is our projects, which are both applications reviewed and agreements executed. So you can see that we've had a general trend that has matched with the revenues received. However, early on, we were funding a number of smaller dollar projects. Now we are funding about the same number of projects, but the dollar values are higher and the projects are more complex. When I turned in this written presentation, there were two bills that impacted our budget. First, the Senate Bill 202, which is the Independent Multidisciplinary Science Team Reform. This bill would eliminate IMST and instead establish the Oregon Academy of Sciences. We have been the funder for that program over time, and a portion of the funds from IMST would be used to begin the Oregon Academy of Sciences. And then, as we've talked about before, the Working Forests and Farms Program, which would establish a program for acquiring or conserving working forests and farms, focusing on achievement of conservation benefits on those working forests and farms. We are continuing to work on that bill as well. Since that time, House Bill 3333, the Salmon License Plate Bill, also would impact our budget. And there is a bill 3334 that would require the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board to spend $2 million per year on strategies to protect and restore sage-grouse habitat out of our grant funds. We've been in conversation with Representative Bentz about that bill. We have not had a legislative earmark on our grant funds in past biennia, and we're working through the details with the representative on this as we move forward because it's new territory. This I've just provided as a summary of how our budget proposals tie back to our investment strategy and strategic plan. You'll see, again, in working with our board, we make sure that any of these things that we are proposing as a part of our budget or the governor's budget match well with our strategic plan. And they've done a good job of keeping their eye on that, as have we, to make sure that we are really effectively implementing our strategic plan on the ground. I've also provided here a list of our 10% reduction options, and this is available in your budget book as well. finally, I want to spend a little bit of time on the best part of our job. So we are a granting agency, and every day there are folks on the ground who are implementing projects. And we can look at that in the abstract and say that's great, and there are a great number of jobs that are created, and the investments stay locally. We have over 7,400 grant investments, over half $1 billion since 1999 when we started. Prior to the passage of Measure 66, we had a $500,000 biennium budget. So the shift over time has been amazing, and the work on the ground even more so. We have restored 4,300 miles of streams with our grant investments, 5,600 miles of habitat accessible for fish, 43,000 acres of wetlands, which is a pretty big investment over time, and improve the condition. Often people think that we are only a salmon agency. We've improved the condition of nearly 1 million upland acres across the state over that time. And again, these investments result in 15 to 24 jobs for every $1 million invested, and 90 cents of every dollar stays in local communities.
Yes, Senator Hansel. Can we go back to the slide? I'm just curious. The 15 to 20 jobs, is that in... Are those permanent jobs after the grant or the million has been invested, or is that jobs to invest the million, or both? So what's the difference?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, it's a combination of both. We can make the study. University of Oregon did a great study in 2010, and we'd be glad to make that available. It goes into detail on their analysis.
Of the 15 to 20, do you remember how many permanent jobs come out of per million invested that stick around?
Co-Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel, I don't, but we'd be glad to follow up with you on that. So I come from an agriculture background, so I wanted to start with an agriculture slide. This, for any of you who've been around Wasco County, there's some pretty big slopes when you're farming over in Wasco County. There are some different ways that you can manage the land there. They have what they call conventional tillage, where after you harvest, you plow the fields fully, and then you plant into a clean field the next year. As you can see in the slide on the left, that can tend to result in a lot of erosion from both wind and water. On the right-hand side, you can see what we call no-till, which means that after you harvest, you leave some stubble in the ground, and the next year you plant directly into that stubble. It makes a huge difference in the amount of erosion that you see on the ground. So here's what the erosion looked like in 1850 in the 15 Mile Creek watershed. It was less than 2 tons of erosion per acre per year. That's a good number. By 1950, you can see it had switched fairly entirely to between 10 and 15 or over 15 tons per acre. The work that we've done, along with U.S. Department of Agriculture and others in this area, you could see the trend starting to change in 2002, 2013. We are nearly back to where we were in 1850. So these are the kind of projects on the ground with private farmers and ranchers who are helping to directly improve soil erosion in watersheds across the state. In the McKinsey River watershed, the Eugene Water and Electric Board is developing a voluntary incentive program. It's in the pilot phase right now. It's exploring payments and services to landowners with good quality riparian habitat to make sure that we protect that and maintain that so that EWEB can avoid treatment and restoration needs later. They're developing some amazing tools and testing them, some methodologies, and they're working in partnership with landowners and others. Their goal is to work with multiple small landowners at a watershed scale. We believe that this is going to be a pilot for other municipalities and have been investing to support and test the model. Here's a specific project in the Lower Umpqua. It's an in-stream habitat enhancement program. Local partners and managers have identified locations for in-stream log placement and other work. And I tell you, when you're out there on these projects, they're really, really big logs. These guys know what they're doing. It takes a lot of heavy equipment, helicopters, other work to get this done on the ground. The work completed by the partners included adding large wood into Camp Creek and associated tributaries. This resulted in 4.5 miles of river habitat improved. We have an investment in that project of just under $220,000. And then we start talking about outcomes, particularly in terms of water quality. On the left, you'll see how this is how we've had collective efforts along the Wilson. This is over on the coast in the Tillamook area. Our investments are really making a difference on the ground. You see a combination of our investments for fish passage and streams. You see the pink is our riparian projects and road projects. The green are U.S. Department of Agriculture and our CS projects. And you can also see where we have monitoring stations in combination with the Department of Environmental Quality. And you can see over time that levels of bacteria are decreasing. And they're decreasing at a rate that is better than we would have expected if the treatments had not been in place. Wychuse Creek is in central Oregon, a tributary to the Deschutes. This same monitoring partnership that includes us, NRCS, Department of Environmental Quality, and Department of Agriculture, that same team has been monitoring over here in Wychuse Creek. The monitoring indicates that there are great ecological improvements by decreasing stream temperature in Wychuse Creek. You can see before restoration what the average trends were and then after restoration. The work was working on channels to re-meander the channels and work with irrigation companies to pipe their irrigation water, which allowed more water to be in stream throughout the year. Juniper seems to be a big discussion in this and other legislative sessions, along with sage grouse. We invest a lot in juniper projects in the state. Since 99, we've invested over $8 million in 275 grants, over 96,000 acres of juniper habitat, much of that related to sage grouse. This is a project in Baker County. This is before, this is after. Sage grouse are very leery about being anywhere where there are high trees because raptors hang out in high trees and sage grouse aren't very fast. So this kind of work is going to bring sage grouse back into this habitat where otherwise they would have avoided it completely. In the John Day, we have worked together with local partners to implement 93 total projects involving 2,700 miles of stream habitat. And again, it's really hard to understand that until you take a look. So this charts over time what it looks like when you open up stream habitat. So the yellow dots are projects. Before 98, those are the projects that were completed. Between 98 and 2000, you see the number of stream miles that become open by implementing just a few additional projects. By 2002, again, another big jump. This is 51 projects and 2,300 miles of stream. 2004, and then by 2008. So it completely changes what the river system looks like for a fish when you implement just 93 projects, opening up nearly 2,700 miles of stream. Finally, in the lower Willow Creek watershed, OEB is participating again with our Conservation Effectiveness Partnership to do some evaluation of water quality. To date, we have piped 56 miles of irrigation laterals and converted about 11,000 acres from flood to sprinkler. The investment over time from OEB has been nearly $5 million. This work helps to prevent cows from accessing canals when the laterals are piped, which reduces the potential impact of pollution. It reduces the need to spray herbicides. So if you've got open canals, you got to deal with weeds. If you've got it piped, you don't. It reduces weed seed transport, and it conserves water. So here's the look of a before and after how the water is managed. And recently, the Malheur Watershed Council, who is monitoring in a tributary to Willow Creek, has found statistically significant decreases in the bacteria counts for Kern Creek. While water quality improvements impairments continue to exist in Willow Creek, we're seeing the trends that we want to see with the projects that we're doing on the ground. I'd like to thank you for your time and attention this morning and would be glad to answer any additional questions that you have.
Yeah, Senator Hansel.
Just a quick question. On your slides on 12 Mile Creek, where did you say that was located?
15 Mile Creek, you mean?
I mean 15
Mile. It's in Wasco County.
And where about?
It's
an orientation, if you have one there.
It feeds in east of the Dalles. Is that right? Okay, west of the Deschutes. So it feeds directly into the Columbia, Senator Hansel, west of the Deschutes.
West of?
The Deschutes River.
Before you get to the Dalles? West of the Deschutes, you get through to Celilo, and then where does it come in? I'm sorry, for the minutia here, I'm just curious since it's in my district.
For the record, Greg Sieglitz, Monitoring Reporting Program Manager, Chair Rayfield, Senator Hansel. The 15-mile creek basin parallels the Deschutes River coming off the east slopes of Mount Hood effectively, and the mouth of 15-mile creek dumps into the Columbia River just downstream of the Deschutes. So between the Dalles and the Deschutes River.
Okay. We're in relation to, say, Celilo.
It would be downstream of Celilo.
Okay, right behind the dam then, that
canyon? It would be above the Dalles Dam, yes.
Right there,
yes.
Okay, got it. I don't know where it is. Thank you.
All right. And I believe you were
any
concluded.
Further questions? All right,
all right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Director. And then we'll go ahead and call up Ms. Connolly. Although I'm not really calling you up because you're already sitting there.
All right. For the record, this is Kathy Connolly with Chief Financial Office. And I am OEB's executive budget analyst. I will be pretty quick because the agency has covered a lot of this information, but this is their expenditure history, recent expenditure history, and the size of their staffing. As you can see, the governor's budget continues significant Measure 76 investment in grants and operations. There is a significant rise in the other funds, which is the yellow. That is directly attributable to the Working Farms and Forests Initiative and to the increase in the Federal Forest Collaborative. So that's why there's a large increase there. The total funds budget for this agency is $115.2 million. Grants. The grant portion of their budget is 105.7 in total funds. So that leaves only 9.6 in total funds for their operations. This is a view of what Maida was talking about earlier. You can see visually that payments to other entities are a significant part of their budget. The operations, what I've identified as operations, is really their staff salaries, benefits, and supplies and services that cover that staff and other administrative costs. It also includes the cost of issuance of new bonding. That goes into the operations part. The payments to other entities are their grants. The payments to state agencies, that's picking up the payments to ODFW and to Water Resources. I did want to point out, just in terms of the program area as a whole, this agency has less than 40 staff. But their budget is 6.2% of the total funds budget for the natural resource area. But it's less than 1% of the natural resource program FTE. It's almost 16% of the natural resource program area general fund lottery fund budget. And all of that is Measure 76 lottery funds, which leads me to their revenue history. The first thing to notice is there is no general fund in this agency. It is solely funded with lottery funds, other funds, and federal funds. As noted by LFO at the beginning, lottery funds is an important resource, and what we are seeing over time is that the lottery resources big uptick in 2007-2009. It has since been declining and really sort of bumping along at the same level for this agency. Earlier this week, you had Parks before you there, the other significant lottery fund agency, and this agency in some ways faces the same issues, that lottery funds are not probably going to increase in the foreseeable future. Costs are rising, and so that's an issue that will have to be addressed. We did, in the December lottery forecast, see a slight uptick in projected lottery funds for the next biennium, but probably, but nobody balances to the December lottery fund forecast, and so we'll have to wait till the May one to see what is really going to happen. Go ahead. And then in addition to the kind of policy requests that the director highlighted in her presentation, I did want to point out a couple of adjustments that will need to be made as a result of really errors in the governor's budget. The first one is not that. That's, again, referencing the work that we'll be doing with LFO on potential needed other federal fund limitation for recently awarded grants. But we also will need to add other fund limitation and potentially lottery fund limitation for positions that were placed in the governor's budget. Revenue was there, but unfortunately, I failed to put in limitations. So we may need to make that adjustment. We'll work with LFO. We're also proposing to add an additional $2 million in other fund limitation for bonds under the working farms and forests, if that comes to pass. And then the final one is, again, the shift in funding from salmon plates. So we're just identifying those potential errors. They are technical errors, but they were large enough to bring to the committee and alert you to those. And as I say, we'll be working with LFO on those as we go forward. I'd be happy to take any questions, but otherwise that's it.
Thank you very much.
Questions?
All right. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public hearing and adjourn the meeting.